Everyone, it's Donna Fox, and you are listening to Akashic Wisdom. We're on bbsradio.com, and I am so looking forward to talking to you tonight. Got some questions that have been emailed to me, and I'm ready to take your questions. Remember, this is your program, and this program is as interesting as your questions. So we really want you to either email or call in live. One thing I do want to tell you is that if somebody is on the line and I'm talking to them and you call in and get a busy signal, don't worry about it. Once they're off the line, you listen close and then you can call right in and be right on. You won't have any waiting. But tonight, and again, you know, this is a program about how the Akashic Records can truly change your life and move you into a different space. Answer your questions about your life and about how things go. And that's what I am just excited to be here, and I'm excited to help you. So the first question, and I think you have the telephone numbers if you're listening to BBS, but if you're streaming and you would like to call in, the telephone numbers here at BBS Radio are 877-876-5227. In the U.S., or it's 888-815-9756 in Canada or U.S., or if you want to dial direct if you're out of the country, our country code is 01, and you can dial direct 530-876-3222. Okay, so let's talk about the first question. Now, just to give you an idea of how we work this, prior to the program, I open the records. And I do it consciously. And for those who have been listening for a while, they understand how this works. And then I take your questions. And you can email me the questions at info@akashicwisdom.com. That's akashicwisdom.com. And so the first question tonight is about procrastination. And so I'm going to read the direct question, and then we're going to ask the record keepers to comment, and would love to hear your comments or your questions about this subject or any subject you would like to know. The only thing I ask you to save for a private consultation with me is what's my purpose, not because it's not a good question, but because we want to really get questions that are of interest to everyone that's listening, and what's my purpose is basically of only interest to you. So, but you can call me for a consultation anytime you want, and that number is 216-691-1233. Okay, that's a private number, and you can call that 24/7, and they'll take a message, and no problem. All right, so the question tonight is on procrastination, and the email says, help me. Help me understand why I procrastinate on things I know I should do. Days go by, and I don't do what I know I should do, and yet I allow other things to get in the way and take my attention. Help me understand this. This is interfering with my life. Well, I've got to tell you that you're not the only one that deals with procrastination, my dear. I'm just going to wait for the information to come from the records. Here's what you need to know, and you've asked that I not use your name, so I'm going to call you Sarah, just because I need a name to talk to you about. Okay, Sarah, what's important here is that you get very clear about where the anger lies about feeling like you have to do something. The procrastination that you're allowing yourself to move into is actually based on shame. And there are aspects to the different chores. The word sounds like, if it sounds like chores, it doesn't feel responsibilities, things, commitments. That's what it is. It's commitments that you've made that you have somehow moved into a belief system that you will fail at these things. And there is a fear of failure if you do it on time. And so what you want to really look at is how you handle stress. And what I'm also hearing is that you have a sense of that you work best under pressure. And that's been going on since you were a little kid. And so what's important here is that working under pressure is actually a learned habit and a false belief. You're actually working with this as an excuse for not stepping into your greatness. And so by procrastinating, you make the excuse that you did it under pressure, so therefore it wasn't as good as it could have been. And so it's what's really important here is for you to get very clear on how you're not telling yourself the truth. And notice that by not telling yourself the truth, it's causing you additional shame. So let me give some more explanation on that. When you don't tell yourself the truth, there is an underlying energy. Again, it's based on a belief system, but the underlying energy is that you don't trust yourself. So take a look at the way these dots get connected here. So you commit to doing something that for whatever reason you don't want to do. Or you think you want to do at the time, but for whatever reason ends up scaring you. And rather than actually working through your stuff as far as going deeper about why it scares you, what happens is you start telling yourself things that are not true. Like, I work better under pressure, I'll get it done tomorrow, I'll set a couple of days aside, and then you don't do anything. And all these things are ways that you don't tell yourself the truth. And then when you don't tell yourself the truth, you set yourself up for shame. And when you feel that you're in shame, you move into a lack of trust. And when you move into a lack of trust, you move into an anger itself. And the anger itself weighs heavy on you, creating an aversion and eventually a depression, so that you move to such a space that you end up feeling overwhelmed. And the overwhelmed makes you stop. And then the cycle happens all over again, because by that time you've really come to the point of knowing that you have to get it done, and then you feel and the cycle starts moving all over again. And so we understand what the issue is. What we want to know is how can she neutralize this pattern and be free of it, move free of it. So I'm waiting now for the record keepers to download some information. And so here's what's important for you to understand. Whenever you move into or you begin to procrastinate, it's going to be absolutely essential that you begin to ask yourself the following questions. Number one, what am I afraid of? What is the truth of that fear? The next questions would be, who am I truly trying to please? The other piece is, what am I most angry at about saying yes to this chore, responsibility, project, whatever it is you're procrastinating? What am I angry about? What is that anger about? The next question is, what would it take to forgive myself to move forward with this, to move forward with this project? And the other piece is really considering what your concern of failure is around this. So this is a big question. Procrastination is a form, obviously, of self-sabotage. And so there it'd be really important for you to take a look at how self-sabotage has actually also been a pattern in your life. I mean, there are other ways of sabotaging oneself, but this is just one of them. And so the issue here of self-sabotage has much to do with you moving into telling yourself the truth and trusting yourself. We were talking about trusting self before. And so when you're talking about trusting yourself, you have to ask yourself that question, what would it take in order for me to trust myself? And what would have to happen for me to trust myself? That's very, very important information for you right now. And so I want you to really look at that, and then when you're ready, give me a call. So we could actually talk about this. You could either call me personally or privately, or you can call me on the air. So those are some of the questions you really want to look at as you're moving through this. A lot of this has to do with you being very clear on what exactly do you want. What do you really want out of the project that you're procrastinating? In other words, like, what do you want out of it? What do you expect? And also, there's an issue around the fear of failing. What is that fear of failing all about? Where was that from? And many times, And what they're showing me is with you, is that it also stemmed from childhood and the fear of being wrong. There was a big issue around being wrong at your house. Like, you didn't want to be wrong. And yeah, like a real strong father figure. And the idea of being wrong was really, really big. So think on that, and give me a call when you're ready, and or email me again, and we'll see what we can come up with. In the meantime, we have a caller. Hello, caller.
Hi, Donna. It's Sharon from Ohio.
Hey, Sharon from Ohio. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good tonight. How about yourself?
Good. I'm good.
Hey,
how can we help you tonight?
I got a question for the records.
Hey.
Some of us are still dealing with Rick's death, and one of the questions that has come forward is why is it that some people linger for long periods of time in the process of dying in vegetative states or comas, things like that, elderly people, and and other people are just taken in the prime of their life, such as our friend Rick. So that's my question.
Well, good. Stay on the phone so we can talk a little bit about this. For my listeners and for you, ladies and gentlemen, I want to make a comment about what Sharon's talking about. If you're just tuning in, on August 10th, a very dear friend of ours, Rick Slavik, left the physical plane, and his wife, Jane, is also sudden. I happened to be there for the weekend, and was actually honored to be a part of this transition. And Jane was on that program on August 10th. So for anybody who wants to kind of bring themselves up to speed and really hear how spirituality works in their life, Jane actually was able to be on the show to talk about her journey in spirituality as he was taken. And Sharon, who is on the phone with us tonight right now, was there also. There, Sharon was with Jane the whole time when Rick was in the hospital, and then when Jane came home, I opened her records. And anyway, it was quite a miraculous journey for us all. And naturally, Jane is still in the throes of making sense of this. And so this is a great question, Sharon. So what we want to do is look at this. So the question is why do some people leave quicker than others, basically?
Right, right.
Yes. So just give me a second here. So what happens with why certain people leave faster than others has to do with their individual contracts with their family of origin or those around them. And here's what I'm being shown. Every passing is like a pebble in a pond. And so whether it's a terminal illness that lasts for a long time. We're all terminal, though, you know. But the idea is whether it's a terminal illness that a family has to come together or that actually drives them apart, or whether it's a coma-like situation or a lingering, each one of those situations creates observable experiences for not only the family, but those, the friends of the family, and it's the way that pebble in the pond hits that spreads out to touch the people who had contracted with that being for this lifetime. Now, there are different experiences, obviously, that a person goes through when a loved one lingers opposed to when one is taken fast. But the idea of going quickly actually, it's not one is better than the other, so it's not a matter of that. It's just that the one that goes quickly, it's almost like what they're showing me is like ripping a Band-Aid off. it's like the this particular, we're talking about Rick now, actually, that the idea of him lingering would not have served his purpose, nor would it have served James. Not to get into their stuff, because I don't have, that wouldn't be appropriate, but to answer your question, because I know that Jane wants to understand this as well. Are you there?
I am, and so people who linger, that's part of their individual contract, and it's part of the ripple effect of the persons that they're in contact with.
Yes, both ways. It has because when people linger, they're actually doing things on the other side that you'll find that, like, when people are in comas, they hear everything that's going on around them, but there's also a part of their being that is actually doing some, it's not necessarily emotional, sometimes it is, but a lot of it has to do with spirit, their records are saying is spiritual cleanup of the lifetime that they were here on the planet.
Hmm.
So whether it's, and I can't give you an example other than they're saying spiritual cleanup. The emotional cleanup, if you will, comes from the closure that their family, friends, and relatives or whatever has with the person who is passing, or the lack of closure. So it works both ways.
So it really isn't, it's one of those illusions then, when we see someone in a coma or somebody who's lingering, that we think that nothing is happening. There's a work process that is still taking place in the unseen.
Totally, completely, it's truly an illusion. Because there is much happening in the unseen. And so it's really important that if you're working with someone who has a coma or is in a coma, that you speak to them about your completion with who they are in the here and now, and your gratefulness for them being in your life.
Mm-hmm.
It's the gratefulness for those people who can, and that's real closure. When one person can come to the point of forgiveness within themselves and for the other person, should there be an issue, and move into a space of gratefulness for having known this person or having this person in their life, it's that gratefulness that allows the energy, the soul, if you will, to move more quickly from this place.
Yes, this has been very helpful. That's been very helpful. Let me ask this: in terms of people who have the kind of spiritual understanding of that we've been talking about, what is the process? What is the best way the record keepers can suggest in terms of our grieving, of our mourning?
That's a great question. First, what's very important is to not hold back on the grieving. There's a human part that needs to cry, that needs to wail, that needs to question, that needs to be angry, or not. It's like every stage needs to be humanly embraced, because you can have a spiritual knowing now and hear a song on the radio that brings you humanly, just crumbles you. And to try to be stoic during these times is not allowing the total process. So the idea here is that there are times that the spiritual aspect of who you are will actually seem lost. It's almost like you feel disconnected, although that's not true.
Mm-hmm.
But there's an anger or a disbelief or the human personality doesn't understand it. And the loss is so great that it's hard for the individual to really make sense of it. And so when you can't make sense of it, what happens is the natural tendency is to think, oh, well, I must not be connected, or I've lost it, or I can't feel my angels, or I can't feel, I want to feel the loved one that has gone beyond, and I can't get at them, and all of those situations or all those types of things are very, very, very normal. And so it's about when those things happen, it's very important to move into the gratitude of the life that you shared,
mm-hmm.
or the gratitude of the presence of that person, and it's moving it into the gratitude. One of the things that came from the records this morning when I was working, as you know, I'm working on an issue on prosperity. I'm putting together a workshop. And this actually ties in. That's what the record keepers are telling me. It ties in. And what they were saying, what the record keepers said was very important. It said, gratitude is the vibratory match for receiving.
Okay.
And that's, if you just think about that, that can actually be very profound. And we're not talking about gratitude with if I'm grateful for this, then I'm going to get that. It's not a manipulative type of gratitude. It's the gratitude that uplifts and brings joy. And in a sense of a loss, it's a gratitude that humbles and makes you happy that you had the time that you had with the person.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't mean you can't be angry that they're not there, and it doesn't mean that you can't feel sad that they're not there, but at that moment, if you can bring as much gratitude in as possible, it's going to ease the transition of your own abilities of understanding. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, it does. But I know it's also not an easy process as we continue to go through this.
Not at all.
Because there's parts of me that just want to shake my fist and go, this is so unfair, and this has hurt people that I've love and. Why does this have to be? And yet on the other side, I know that that's just humanity coming forth, and I do understand the gratitude for a life lived.
That's valuable. It's valuable to get that anger out because, whenever we can move, quite frankly, we should not be afraid of anger. And we just need to move into the anger and allow the fist to be shaken. God can handle it. But it's really what's very the most important thing the record keepers are saying is that people understand this is not about God doing anything to anyone.
Mm-hmm. Right.
This is not about God taking someone.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what the situation, it is not God's choice. It's not because God doesn't have it's our soul's evolutionary choice. God holds the energy for us to be who we are to the fullest of who we are, and our contracts are our contracts. It's like our parents can't control their children any more than God can control us. I mean, I know that sounds a little bit crazy, but when it comes to contracts of how and what we're going to experience.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that everything is in divine order has to do with us being very clear that we are divine, and when things happen in our life, it is divine order because we are a part of the divine.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you brought up about contracts. This will be my last question. I'll get off the line here. But
not at all. I'm sure that my listeners are finding this interesting. Please continue.
Well, concerning sacred contracts that we make with each other, what do the record keepers say in terms of what is the best way, what is the process for remembering what that covenant is that you've made, that contract you've made with somebody on the other side that you now realize that it's time to fulfill, what's the best way to get a handle on that, to remember what it is you're supposed to do that, that you've made this contract for?
So what you're asking is, how can I be right with my contract? Is that correct?
You're sure that you've made a contract with someone to do something on this earthly plane of existence, but how do you find out exactly what that contract is, and how do you fulfill it? How do you remember what that was?
Well, first of all, you're never going to really remember it. I know that doesn't give you comfort.
Thank you, Donna. That's helpful.
Yes, I thought you'd like that. what they're saying is that because everything is changeable and mutable because of free will choice, the contract is changeable and mutable as well. The fact that you made a contract to be with someone or help them or move into a space of knowing them better or whatever the contract is, the contract... And again, there are many different contracts, but we're going to talk about the pleasant ones, not the ones that were, it's a painful lesson, okay?
Right.
Because I think that's the kind of contract you're talking about, right?
Exactly.
I mean, we're not going to talk about the ones that need forgiveness and stuff like that. We're talking about, right now, those are different kind of contracts you can understand in a different way, and I can help people with that, but for the contracts, when it comes to, like, say, from a friendship point of view or from a loved one point of view, the contracts can be identified by following the joy. Not following the responsibility, by following the joy. So when you've made a contract with someone to assist them, the assistance needs to come from a place of joy, not from a have to, a should, or a responsibility place.
Wow, that takes my breath away. Wow, that's a neat expression.
It's very important. Because we think we have contracts, and the word contract that the record keepers are saying fills us up with shoulds. And it's not about should. It's about joy. It's about service from a joyful point of view, not from I should be doing this and I should be doing that, and that this is what is expected of me. It is never anything more than what is joyful, because when you bring joy to another person's life by being joy, by serving in joy, by only doing things that bring you joy, you cannot honor a contract in any greater way.
Wow, that's given me a whole new perspective of it, and suddenly it brings me some great clarity.
Right.
Donna, I think you're amazing.
Well, the record keepers make me look good, so thank you. but that's the piece, and only do stuff that makes you feel good, Sharon.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the piece, you know. In other words, like, we have so many, you know, it's funny. Here's what the record keepers are saying. One of the things, and ladies and gentlemen listening to this, I hope you're finding benefit, but Jane and Rick had a cat named Jake, and when Rick died, Jake took off, and he hasn't been back since, has he?
No.
Mm-mm. Because he was out to, he was looking for his joy. What I'm getting now is that little cat is off to find his joy.
Hmm.
His joy was being with Rick. That's what I'm hearing.
That's who
he liked. That's who he enjoyed being with.
That's true.
And he is off to find other joy. He was not his intention to be there to be a burden or to be worried about. He was a, you know, Jake is a free spirit animal, and loved being there for that specific, just because it was joyful when he came around, and when he felt like being joyful someplace else, that's where he went. But what's important for everyone there to know is what I'm actually getting right now is that, and I'm not a medium. I don't want anybody to think that this, the work that I do is not medium work. But what I am receiving is that Rick is coming in and out of the house now. Mm-hmm. And I just got that just now, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so if you can relay that to Jane and let her know that I can give her some more information. I mean, I don't know what more information I can give her, but I'm happy to open her records and let her know about it.
Sure, sure.
You know, but I'm just saying is that's what I, just as we're talking now, I just got, by the way, you know, Rick has been in and out of the house.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
That would not surprise me.
Right. But I don't know whether she's aware of it or not.
Mm-hmm.
She may not be ready to be aware of it, and that's okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I very much appreciate the information on the contracts that we make. I think I was taking this way so serious and so, such a sense of responsibility to it that I had forgotten the aspect of joy.
Right.
That has been very helpful to hear this evening, Donna.
Good, good. Well, it's been a pleasure talking, and I love to call any time. I love talking to you.
You betcha. You take care. And those of you listeners out there, let me tell you, Donna's the real deal. Good night, Donna.
Thank you, Sharon. Good night. Bye-bye. Well, that's just wonderful. I want you folks to know that you out there may or may not know, I've mentioned this before, but my first husband died when my kids were 16 months old, 3 and 6, at the age of 40 of a massive heart attack. He was gone in 5 hours, and Rick had a stroke, and his stroke happened on a Friday, and he actually passed on Sunday, so it was quite sudden for Jane as well, but... So I'm speaking, if I'm telling you it's the record keepers talking, it's the record keepers talking, but there's a part of me, there's the local Donna, if you will, that really does have a lot of empathy for what's going on with Jane right now, and we just send her lots of light and love, and she's blessed to have friends like Sharon, and Jane's got a lot of other friends, and her sister's really close to her. So we all have to find our own blessings at the best way we can, and to remember that gratefulness. The gratefulness is so important. When the record keeper said this morning to me that gratefulness is the vibrational match to receiving, it just opened up a whole new concept for me. And I was just thrilled. I mean, it's like I want to make that my new mantra. To move into gratefulness, and they weren't talking about necessarily gratefulness in a large way. It was really gratefulness about in a very small way. It was about just allowing the idea of gratefulness to lift us, to lift me, if you will, to a place of joy that shifted my ability to receive. It was it's an honoring. It's a total shift. And so I was I was so excited to write that down and journal just to kind of give you an idea. Is I'm actually what I was talking to Sharon about this prosperity weekend. What's come forward is I'm going to be working. I'm going to be offering in Cleveland, Ohio, a 2-day workshop called Prosperity Marketing from the Akashic Records. Now, you don't have to have an Akashic Record background. In other words, you don't have to know how to open your own personal Akashic Records. What you have to do is be willing to investigate and be willing to receive information around about how to create wealth and prosperity in your life. And so in doing so and preparing for this, the record keepers have been giving me a lot of exercises so I can increase my prosperity and wealth, and I really like that as well. And so what this workshop is all about, it's about really getting down into not only your belief systems and what's going on, but it's about how to create a relationship with money. It's about how to really move into the depth of who you are, and not only what blocks you from money, but what are the patterns in your life that you need to neutralize with actual suggestions on how to do that. And it's for holistic practitioners, it's for entrepreneurs, it's for business people, and it's for people who are already working for someone who just want to increase their wealth. Everyone needs a business plan for their life. And so basically, this is about creating a business plan for your life. And so that's going to be taking place in September on the 13th and 14th of September here in Cleveland. If you'd like to know more about it, please give me a call or let me know. It's $200, and it's 2 full days of searching information and exercises and processes and meditations and really creating a new life for yourself. So again, give me a call at 216-691-1233 if you'd like more information on that, or you can also email me at info@akashicwisdom.com. So we're going to go on to our next question, unless there's another caller. We've got about 15 more minutes left. And so if there's a caller out there, the lines are open. You're going to want to dial our 800 numbers, and let me give you those again. We're at 800. Oh, I had them just a second ago. Okay. Excuse me for this. Oh, it's 877-876-5227 in the U.S., 888-815-9756 in Canada and the U.S., and 530-876-3222, and that's a direct line. Also, just want to mention, I'm going to be speaking at the Journey Expo, and it's going to be in Cleveland, Ohio. Actually, it's Journeys Mag. Journeysmag.com or thejourneymag.com. I think that's it. But if you call me, I'll give you the information on that as well. And that's the first weekend in September. So if that's of interest to you, it's going to be a great time. Dan Millman's going to be speaking, as well as Carolyn Mace, and I'm going to be speaking. So it's going to be a real good time for anyone who would like to stop by there. Also, if you'd like to know what my schedule is, email me. I'll give you what the classes are around town. So, well, around the country. Got classes in Pennsylvania and Los Angeles and Minnesota coming up. And your place, if you invite me. I go where I'm invited. Okay, so the next question that we had emailed here is, I have a friend who always asks for the same advice, and wants to involve me in her drama. What can I do to make her change? So she has a friend who always asks for the same advice, wants to involve me in her drama. What can I do to make her change? I feel drained after I talk to her. Okay, so how many folks out there have had what we call energy sucks? True energy sucks. These folks are out there, and they have, no matter what happens, they have the same problems. They marry the same people. They have the same bosses. No matter what kind of job they seem to attract the same situations in their life over and over again. And then when they come to us for information, for us to help them, even when we give them our advice, they don't want to hear it. If they listen to it, they don't follow it. And so what happens is that this information for this particular woman who has written me, let me just kind of address this. All right, so this particular person, I can't get into their records, but I will tell you regarding your records, is that you have a pattern of being a rescuer. And so it's as if you're rescuing damsels in distress or animals in distress, or you have this pattern of wanting to help everyone. And in doing so, what you have found is that you end up giving up you in order to help them. And in this particular situation, it's a matter of wanting to really fix your friend rather than allowing her to be who she is. Now, clearly, part of this is big lessons on boundaries here. What's important for you to understand is as you move into working with this person, if she continues to ask the same things over and again, or she has the same patterns, what you can do is comment on the fact that she has these same patterns, that you've talked about this before, and that you've given her the best advice you know how. And so it's up to you, as the person who is listening having this friend who wants this information, I'll call you Sarah as well. So listen, Sarah. So when Sarah, you, and let's say Jane calls you, okay? So Jane calls Sarah, and you have to tell Jane this is what I've told you, and I care about you, but I can't give you any other information. So it's either... you have to figure this out yourself. You have to set the boundaries, Sarah. You have to fit the boundaries. The boundaries are there for you to say, I can no longer give you what you're looking for because I couldn't give it to you to begin with because I don't have it to give. Because every time you say yes to Jane, when you mean no, you create more pain and more shame for you. Because saying yes when you mean no is not the way to do it. It creates a pattern that moves then into actually a depression for you because you're not speaking your truth. And we actually talked about that earlier, about not speaking your truth. So it's going to be important for you to set your boundaries and be very clear about this is what we've already talked about that. Let's talk about something else. And if you can't talk about anything else with me right now, then I have to cut this short. Of course, you're going to be nicer than that, but that's the intention. The intention is to be compassionate, yet clear that you will no longer be the one to rescue this particular person. So, you know, it's interesting in our lives how we allow others to really suck our energy, and then we don't know why we're tired, and we don't know why we somehow don't have the energy to do what it is what we need to do for ourselves. And so it's really important for you to take a look at the patterns of your life. How many times have you said yes when you mean no, and how many times have you gotten yourself into something that you actually ended up not doing, or possibly were ready to, like you wanted to kind of blow it off, but you felt guilty about it. And so that's really going to be important, that you not do anything that makes you feel guilty. You have to start being straight with yourself, and you have to be very, it's very important that you be straight with others. And so that's going to be really, really important for you to take a look at how that plays in your life. Very important. Very important. Okay, so let me, I know that there was another question here that was emailed that I wanted to get to. In the meantime, again, please call in. This show is only as good as your questions. And you can, again, email me at info@akashicwisdom.com. And I just lost that. Oh, just a minute. Don't mean to have any dead air here, but it was a really good question, and so, there it is. Okay, it's actually a question from a lady by the name of Donna, who thinks my name is Dana, but my name is really Donna, D-A-H-N-A. Okay, so what her question is, it's about a life's purpose, and this will give you an idea of why we don't necessarily talk about life's purpose here. It says, I already feel like my life's purpose involves healing. I'm a registered nurse and have been working for 25 years. And she has an interest in alternative healing and has been on a spiritual path. She wants to know if the records can indicate a special area that she might pursue. And she's also had some challenges with relationships. And she's looking for a soulmate. Okay. Here's, first of all, what I have to tell you, Donna, is there, as far as pursuing a special career, the records will never tell you what to do. They'll give you all the information you need in order to make the appropriate decisions. However, if in fact you were to understand and know how to access your own personal records, what you could do is ask the questions of the record keepers, which would be, show me what it feels like if I were to, and then show me what it feels like if I were to. And so you have an actual way of making a decision based on your feelings. And remember, what's the absolute truth is the way we manifest anything is with our feelings. And so what the record keepers are saying to you regarding an area, a spiritual area that from healing that would be good for you to pursue is it's about what are you the most curious about that brings you the most joy. That the joy issue is so important. We as humans get so wrapped up in our shoulds that we don't realize that we need to choose what our life is all about based on joy. So the old adage is if it feels good, do it, is absolutely true. And the other thing is very, very quickly, she had a question about, and again, we could explore more deeply when we would work personally on the different aspects that are actually in the records of things that would be appropriate for you. As far as there's a variety of different things that you could choose from based on which ones gave you the most joy. But I don't know if you're listening now, so I'd rather talk to you personally. But one of the things she's asking about is about committed relationships. And that's a general question that I want to answer to everyone. What's important for you to all of you when you're looking for a quote-unquote soulmate, first of all, the comment on soulmate is very, it's like overused. It's rare that people truly find their soulmate in any one lifetime. And if they do, that's wonderful. But the reality is that when you find, let me just back up here. What they're saying is that it's about really getting clear about how you want to feel in a relationship and how you, and when you understand how you want to feel in a relationship, you become a vibrational match for that relationship to come to you. So it's about how do you feel now and how do you feel in your own, with your relationship with yourself. And so that's a very important piece. And so once you understand how you want a relationship to help you, not to help you feel, how do you want to feel in a relationship is going to be important. So you're going to want to feel cherished. You're going to want to feel loved. You're going to want to feel appreciated. But what you're not going to want to do is feel needed. Because relationships where you feel needed end up feeling overwhelming. So it's not about you needing anyone or them needing you. It's about feeling the joy that you can feel with each other that makes you feel even more joy. So I want you to think about that. And I want you to think about, how do I really want these relationships to feel? How do you want your life to look and feel? And that's where we need to go. And that's what you need to look at, for real. So, you know, I've had such a good time talking to you folks tonight. I love that Sharon sent her, called in with her questions. I'm so happy for my two Sarahs that sent their questions in, and for Donna, 1259, that sent in her question or emailed her question. And I would just like to encourage you all for next week to email me your questions. Labor Day weekend next week. So we really want to be grateful, really grateful. And you know what? When you're talking about gratefulness, by the way, I want you to start spelling it G-R-E-A-T-F-U-L. Grateful. Because we are great and we are full and we are full of love. And so that's what's really going to be important. Start calling yourself grateful because you are gratefully acknowledged in the unseen and gratefully acknowledged here by the record keepers. Well, it's time for us to close now. I've had a great time talking with you. I hope you come back and listen again next week. We've got some wonderful surprises for you as September rolls around. So I want to thank the masters, teachers, and loved ones for all your wonderful beings of light and all their wonderful healing, wisdom, and information. We ask that all those listening, may their hearts be opened, their burdens be lifted, and may you all truly look into the mirror and see into the heart of the divine. And that, with that, we close the records by saying amen, amen. The records are now closed. This is Donna Fox saying goodnight to all of you. Have a wonderful, miraculous, grateful week, and we'll talk to you next week. Good night, everyone.